This hearing, the Senate Health and Social Services Committee, will now come to order. Today is Thursday, February 5th, and the time is 3:32 p.m. We are in Butrovich Room 205. Members present are Senator Myers, Senator Tobin, myself, Chair Dunbar. Senator Giesel is excused, and I expect, given his special chair is here, that Senator Klayman will be with us shortly. Let the record reflect that we have a quorum to conduct business. Before we begin, I would like to thank Mary Gwynn Kawakami, the Senate Health and Social Services Recording Secretary, and Susan Quigley from the Juneau LAO for staffing the committee today. Today, we are holding an introductory hearing on House Bill 27, Representative Mina's bill relating to medical care for major emergencies. Presenting the bill today, we have Representative Mina's staff member, Katie Giorgio. We also have Dr. Bob Lawrence, Chief Medical Officer, online for questions. We also have Wendy Allen, who is a nurse consultant, and she is also on the phone. So thank everyone for being here today. Ms. Giorgio, would you like to come forward, put yourself on the record, and begin your presentation?
Thank you, Chair Dunbar and members of the Senate Health and Social Services Committee. My name is Katie Giorgio. I am Chief of Staff to Representative Genevieve Mina, House District 19. Thank you very much for hearing House Bill 27. The goal of House Bill 27 is to modernize our systems of care and how we address people who are experiencing heart attacks and strokes and time-sensitive emergencies of that type. Just for a little bit of context, why we brought this bill forward, Representative Mina was having a chat with a neurosurgeon from Anchorage, and this neurosurgeon said, hey, I think that we could do a better job in Alaska in how we address stroke care and time-sensitive emergencies. And at the time, Dr. Ann Zank was our chief medical officer, and she suggested that perhaps a change in statute would be a good way to move forward. And this bill, what it would do was empower the Department of Health to replicate systems of care that we already do for trauma in the state, which we've done since the 90s. And replicate that trauma system of care for strokes and heart attacks. One of the main questions we get as we are talking about this bill is, what do you mean we don't already have a system of care for heart attacks and stroke? You know, my mother had a heart attack and the ambulance came and then she went to this place. Then she went to this place, she got the care she needed and she's fine. And that, like, we have a lot of success in our medical system. However, it has become clear that we could do a better job and we could replicate the success that we've had with our trauma care system in heart attacks and stroke. So what the types of things that this bill will enable the Department of Health to do is develop training and education that would go out statewide to providers, that would be based on standardized, you know, guidelines from accredited, you know, national organizations, professional organizations, best practices, you know, nationally recognized industry standards is what we would adopt into our own systems of care here. Advanced communications, you know, obviously what we're trying to do is just improve the outcomes for Alaskans at the end of the day. So if we're able to get someone who is experiencing one of these time-sensitive emergencies to the right place with the right provider in an appropriate amount of time, could be the difference between that person going home to their home community or needing help with basic daily tasks the rest of their life. I'm going to pause there. I do have Dr. Bob Lawrence on the phone, our chief medical officer. He's really the expert and can explain the need for this a lot better than I can. But I'll pause there. I also, Chair Dunbar, if you would like, I can go through the brief sectional or field any questions at this point.
Why don't we go through the sectional?
Sure. Uh, It's not too long, thankfully. Section 1, subsections 1 through 3 as major emergencies to the existing EMS system. Right now, we only have trauma care in statute. This would add the term major emergencies to that part of the statute, and again, enabling the Department of Health to include heart attacks and strokes in the same kind of way that they do for trauma. Subsection 4... addresses the trauma center designation status for hospitals. I didn't mention this in my opening comments, but part of this is that providers in the state can register with the Department of Health and basically attest that we have, you know, certain equipment and personnel and expertise within our facility. This would be based on sort of national like standards of how they represent themselves and what they're capable of doing, so that there'll be sort of a clear understanding that certain providers might be able to deliver that type of, you know, thrombolytics or whatever the intervention is. So just so everyone is on the same page about what our different facilities are able to do. Section two is about the regulations governing those designations. This was added, I believe, in Health and Social Services on the other body, just again to reaffirm that we're talking about nationally accredited standards, and we're not just making things up here in Alaska. These are, you know, evidence-based practices. And then Section 3 adds a new paragraph, and again, this defines major emergencies specifically to be for heart attacks and stroke.
Thank you, Ms. Giorgio. I have a question, and I don't know if it's for you or better for Dr. Lawrence. Defining major emergency as heart attack and stroke, is that all-inclusive, or are there other things like a pulmonary embolism, for example? Does that fit in this category, or are there other conditions that would be considered a major emergency, or is it just those two?
Sure. And to the chair, I can absolutely have Dr. Lawrence answer this, but I can tell you that as we were drafting the bill, there was a little bit of debate over using that term major emergency. In the profession, they usually will use the term time sensitive emergency. And we're still a little bit, I think everything is good with this major emergency language, but what we're trying to capture again is the time sensitive nature of specifically heart attacks and stroke for the purpose of this bill. So Section 3 again has that, you know, delineation that we're really talking about heart attacks and stroke. Though maybe Dr. Lawrence could expand on your specific question about pulmonary embolisms.
Thank you. Dr. Lawrence, did you hear the question?
Yes. Good afternoon. Thank you, Chairman. For the record, this is Dr. Robert Lawrence. I'm the Chief Medical Officer for Alaska Department of Health. And the question is really a good one, because in the statute, there are different terms that are used. One of those will be just the general term emergency medical services, and then we're introducing this new term of major emergencies. But as used in this particular proposed statute, the term major emergencies is intended to include what we call, as Katie was saying, time-sensitive emergencies. And we usually will put several things in that category. One of those would be trauma, the other would be heart attack, other strokes. Sometimes others would be included, but what all of those share in common is that outcomes are dependent on, in a timely way, getting a patient from the point of crisis to the point of treatment. So your example is a good one, asking about pulmonary embolus. Pulmonary embolus, among many other very serious conditions, are absolutely emergencies. But in terms of the time-sensitive emergencies that are spoken to in this statute, only two broad categories, one of those would be cardiac events, the other broad category of strokes, are included in the statute, which is really pointing forward to giving authority to the Department of Health to build out an entire system for making sure that those particular emergencies are addressed.
Okay. Just a quick follow-up, Dr. Lawrence. So I'm not a medical professional, so I'm asking you for your expertise. But if the key point is whether something is time sensitive or not for an outcome, positive outcome, hopefully, then aren't there some, you know, significantly other conditions besides heart attack or stroke that also rely on. I understand that's what we are doing to we're singling out heart attack and stroke, but if the issue is whether it's time sensitive or not, I guess I thought that an embolism was time sensitive. Am I mistaken in that? Or are there other things that are time sensitive that could be included in here?
Yes, to the chair, that's actually a great way to ask that question. And what I would do is say, take a, if we could, take a step back and recognize that under the statute, there is already a system built out across the state to address medical emergencies in general. Basically, the statute has already given the authority for the department to build out that system. And any example that, you know, may come to mind of an emergency, it absolutely needs to get to the highest level of care available in a given region. In some of our rural regions, that might be a local health clinic, and others, it might be an emergency department. But the system is built out to take care of most medical emergencies. There are certain emergencies, though, that rely, that sort of rise to a higher level, meaning that the system needs to be very well coordinated for getting a person evaluated at the point of crisis. And again, that may be in a very rural part of Alaska, but then appropriately getting individuals to the hospital center where a time-sensitive emergency can be treated. So the analogy that I heard best that sort of at least worked for me was to imagine walking into a hospital. You expect that every single room in a hospital is going to be capable of taking care of most patients. There's a bed, there's the ability to get medications, maybe to check, you know, lab work and so forth. But in that hospital, you expect that there would be perhaps a room to take care of more urgent things like cardiothoracic surgery. There should be an operating room to take care of those major emergencies. But you wouldn't expect that every single room in the hospital is out there for, you know, providing that, that full level of care. In the same way in Alaska, we have a system in place. If you think of Alaska as the big hospital, where every community has access to some level of emergency care, including things that we would say absolutely are important and that need to be addressed in a timely way. But within our state, we also need to build out the coordinated system of care that allows us to take care of specific issues that we put in this category of time-sensitive emergency. And the example there, of course, is trauma care, which has been built out for 15 years. And to that, what this statute does is just add two other conditions, and it gives the authority to the state to say, we're going to build out the ability to build out the system that will allow individuals anywhere in the state who suffer a heart attack or a stroke to be appropriately evaluated and then connected to the best level of treatment. And just as important, that that information will be captured in a registry of sorts that will provide a feedback loop to everyone who is a part of that system so that the system continues to get better. And of course, the point there at the end is that we see fewer poor outcomes when it comes to heart attacks or strokes in the state. So it's a long answer, but I hope that framing is helpful.
I think so. Thank you. We have Senator Tobin and then Senator Klayman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Will we have the department provide us an overview of the fiscal note, or should I hold my questions regarding the fiscal note till that time?
I don't believe the department is with us today. Is there someone from the department available, Ms. Giorgio?
Katie Giorgio, for the record, through the chair, Senator Tobin. If you'd like, I mean, I think I could speak a little bit to the fiscal note if you'd like me to.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. So I'm looking at the fiscal note, and I'm reading through the legislation. I see that in Section 1, the direction to the department is to establish this system coordination for major emergencies. I then look at the fiscal note and note that not only is the dollar amount, but also the description say that they will need a full-time permanent person to create this system. I'm curious of why that's not a a temporary position. If you're creating a system and it's meant to be lifted up, it seems like an ongoing cost for a person to continue to establish something is not necessary. And so I'm curious to understand what exactly this person will be doing in perpetuity.
Sure. Thank you for the question through the chair, Senator Tobin. We also, I think, have Karen Allen on the line, and I might call on her a little bit to help out with my answer. She is involved with the current trauma care system. So one of the things that she shared with me the other day was, at least in terms of trauma care, as you're aware, recently we had a lot of very cold temperatures in part of the state, and it, as part of the work that they do there, is, you know, that we have this employee there at Department of Health, and again in the trauma care section, we were seeing a lot of people with severe frostbite, and that is part of what, you know, the sort of the trauma system responds to. So when we're getting these trends and we're seeing data, and this data collection is really a critical piece too. The data collection, we're seeing particular trends, like people coming in with severe frostbite, or maybe a certain part of the state, as we're benchmarking to other parts of the state, we notice something kind of weird might be going on over here. There's a human being at the Department of Health who's looking at that information and analyzing it and thinking, well, maybe we should do a bulletin out for all of our providers out there as a reminder, here are the protocols that we use when you see these types of things, here are the interventions, whatever it might be. So I think that having that permanent person who is monitoring the data collection, again, we have the designations for the hospitals, someone has to sort of run that program. That's the reason that we would be adding a position in that department.
Yes, Senator Tobin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I think my question around this is related to the idea that we are in a tight fiscal situation. And I think this is a very critical piece of legislation and trying to understand the total cost and how we might be able to bring some of that down.
Sure.
I understand a person reviewing the relevant data in those pieces. However, I'm assuming as they talk about the IT systems that they will need to build out, that some of this work and evaluation could be automated at a later date. And so that might be able to be built into what I think would be a more reflective and lower fiscal note to implement this legislation.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Tobin. We do have Wendy Allen, nurse consultant, online if we want to address the question to her, but first we'll go to Senator Klayman.
Actually, if Ms. Allen has something about the fiscal note, I'm happy to stay on that topic before I go to mine, because mine is not on the fiscal note.
Ms. Allen, can you hear me? And do you have any thoughts on the question that Senator Tobin asked?
Hi, for the record, this is Wendy Allen, and through the chair, and thank you for your question, Senator Tobin. So I am the program manager for the trauma system in Alaska, and my main responsibilities are I oversee the designation of the trauma systems throughout Alaska, so making sure that they have the appropriate equipment, the appropriate personnel, the personnel have appropriate education, and that there's administrative support from the various facilities for the trauma program. And besides just, you know, we do have the data aspect of it, which allows us to do performance improvement, epidemiology throughout the state. So, you know, that can only, I guess, be automated to a certain degree. You know, there ultimately, I think, has to be a human being kind of overseeing the whole system. There could be, I think, some flexibility as to how much of a full-time equivalent, how much FTE would be devoted. Does that answer your question?
Senator Tobin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It does. And I know that we are not the Finance Committee, and so we will allow them to have the opportunity to evaluate how the department came to this determination and the ways that they have built out this request here. But again, I think it's a very critical piece of legislation, and I want to ensure that it gets passed. And I recognize that our fiscal situation might prevent that from happening.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Allen. Senator Klayman?
So this is a question for Dr. Lawrence. Dr. Lawrence, I thought actually the chair's questions about pulmonary embolisms highlighted one of, at least as a EMT who doesn't do that much EMT work. I've always understood pulmonary embolism, at least in terms of the emergency care, tend to be a much more invasive processes, kind of more surgical type procedures to deal with it, whereas strokes and heart issues oftentimes can be addressed fairly effectively with medication and not so many procedures. And so one of the questions I had about the chair's question is one of the distinctions between something like pulmonary embolism that you actually have a lot fewer medical centers that can treat that without a medevac and getting one to a surgery location, whereas some of the stroke medication and some of the cardiac medication is something that can be actually fairly effectively administered in much less, but facilities that actually have a lot fewer providers and fewer instruments and other facilities. And if that question makes sense.
It does. For the record, this is Dr. Robert Lawrence, and through the chair, Senator Klayman. It's actually a great example, and I appreciate you bringing that up because it helps highlight that the legislation as proposed, I don't think it's intended in any way to discount the importance of any, you know, medical emergency. But as you point out, each different medical condition is treated in ways that could be different. So if I can go from pulmonary embolism and say that there are, of course, there's a wide variety of ways that that might present. And some of those cases can be taken care of at the point of crisis, regardless of where in Alaska that occurs. For strokes, there's also a similar, you know, range of presentations, from strokes that are caused by a clot, but there are also other strokes that are caused by bleeding. Without getting too deep into that, in order to find out whether or not a person needs to be in a facility to where they can provide emergency surgery, one of the first things that has to be done is a CT scan. And so imagine being in a rural part of Alaska, if somebody shows signs of an early stroke, the very first step is to get a person to a facility that has a CT scan. But that doesn't necessarily mean they need to go all the way to the facility that's going to do the final procedure, which may end up being a surgical procedure or a medical, you know, type of procedure. Instead, the question is asked close to the point of crisis. The same might be true of heart attacks. Heart attacks, of course, occur. There are different types of heart attacks, and those occur along a range of presentations, some of which absolutely need to get to the highest level of care. Some can be taken care of in a more remote type of setting. And so the distinction there, I think, is an important one, is that we're not discounting that there needs to be a system to take care of any major medical condition. But there are certain conditions where, in order to reach the best outcomes, there needs to be a well-coordinated system where, for example, in rural Alaska, a CT scan can be performed, and using, say, AI technologies and so forth, before the patient is even out of the scanner, the neurosurgeon has already been alerted that there may be somebody who's being brought to Anchorage, that the medevac flight crews are already alerted that somebody needs to move quickly. But if the opposite is true and the condition is not as concerning, then the proper people are alerted locally that they can take care of the problem more remotely. So, yeah, just recognizing that there's a distinction between these different conditions is important.
Very good. Thank you.
Thank you.
Senator Myers?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I may expose my ignorance a little bit on my couple of questions here. So, first of all, I guess my question is to Ms. Giorgio is why exactly do we need a statute change? Why does the Department of Health feel that they don't already have the authority to do what we're asking, you know, put this type of system in place?
Through the chair to Senator Myers, thank you for the question. I think that it is possible that the department could do this without a statute change. However, I'm not sure that's totally true. But okay. Obviously, doing a statute change will, for lack of a better word, force them to do this, right? Like it's an intention on our part as the legislature that we want to do this. So. Again, when we were first starting to think about what can we do to improve the care for Alaskans, and again, you know, Dr. Zink suggested that we go this route, and we thought that that this was a great way to not only bring attention to the matter, but and really like take a look at how we are delivering healthcare in Alaska, and basically say, hey, we have an aging population, very rapidly expanding aging population also in Alaska. Maybe we should be looking ahead and making sure that we have the best system possible to respond to things that are, that commonly are experiencing experienced by our aging population. So it is a way for us to say, hey, this is how we want to take care of our Alaskans by having a better system of care.
Okay. And then
yeah, go ahead, Senator.
Thank you. So a little bit of a follow-up to Senator Tobin's question. You know, as I'm reading through the sponsor statement, hearing your statements and stuff, it sounds like a very good practice of what we're attempting to put in place. But the question is that it sounds like most of it is things like coordination among providers. It sounds continuing education, things like that. A lot of things that really already happen on their own in a lot of ways. So why is it that we need the Department of Health to be centralizing that instead of saying, you know, hey, Providence, you're the best equipped hospital in the state. You know, can you, run some of this continuing education, things like that? Why is it that we need to centralize it to within the state?
Through the chair, to Senator Myers, thank you again for the question. I might call on Dr. Lawrence or Ms. Allen to answer that question because I just think they'll do a better job than I will.
That's fair. Thank you.
Through the chair, Senator Myers, this is Dr. Lawrence. That answer to the question there is underlying the term you use, coordination of care. Right now, hospitals in the state are doing the best they can to build up treatment for these conditions like heart attacks, like strokes. Different hospitals are building up capacity to do that, and to some extent they swap notes and share resources and provide education. So the statute isn't adding something new, as you point out, in that way. But what the statute does that is important is, first of all, recognize that in order to take care of time-sensitive emergencies, it requires all of the facilities across the state to work in a coordinated fashion. In other words, we don't need more hospitals that are able to do everything. We need each hospital to be able to do the right thing at the right moment, wherever they're located in the state, and to do so in a coordinated fashion. So the first thing the statute does is that it gives the authority to the Department of Health to say, for this particular condition, we want a system built out to allow for coordination among all participating facilities. The other thing that it gives the authority to do is to build out a registry of all the cases that occur and to allow that information and that data to loop back to everyone involved in taking care of a case. So, for example, right now in the state, if there's a car accident, if there's any kind of trauma that results in a hospitalization or even a death, all the data from that particular case is kept in a registry, which then in aggregate is reviewed by a trauma registry review committee, which then comes out with recommendations. And anyone who has participated in the chain of events leading to that person's hospitalization has access to see what were the outcomes of the particular condition. That is not true if somebody has a heart attack or a stroke, which might seem strange, but in the lower 48, we found that in at least one urban setting, that 50% of people who are identified as having a stroke in one particular hospital were identified by that stroke at the hospital, but that was unknown to the EMS personnel who brought them in. And that information was never circled back to the EMS agency. And so the EMS personnel were not able to learn from those cases that come back. With the trauma system, what we found is that the ability to take that data and loop it back to everyone involved in the process makes the system better, but also each individual involved in the process better over time. And that's what ends up leading to better outcomes. And so the statute, what it adds is the ability, again, for all facilities to be able to coordinate together and for there to be this collective circling back of data to help in a looping type fashion continually make the system better.
Go ahead, Senator Ryan.
Thank you. So just to kind of clarify on my own mind a little bit, so the analogy I'm kind of coming up with is effectively we're we're kind of creating another 911 system almost, with the difference being that this isn't a system accessible to the public. This is a system between providers to make sure that that information gets dispatched out promptly and accurately. Does that sound accurate?
Through the chair, Senator Myers, I think that's a good analogy. Like with any analogy, we have to be careful how far that we take it. But there are parts of this system, if you imagine when it's built out, that would very much look like a 911 system for hospital facilities and clinics and even down to community clinics across Alaska. And that right now, if a time-sensitive emergency occurs in some parts of Alaska and I am the receiving provider, it may be unclear to me on any given day, who do I call? Where am I going to transfer the patient to? And how do I need to manage the patient while we're waiting for transfer? And so that can create delays in care. But imagine a system like 911, which I like your analogy there, where I, even as a provider, can call, and it's a centralized system that's well coordinated, and given the patient who's in front of me with given symptoms, I can receive a telemedicine consult with a specialist, but then also make sure that my patient is appropriately transferred to the proper level of care.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Senator Meyer. Any further questions? Not seeing any. Ms. Giorgio, before we set this bill aside, do you have any closing comments today?
Thank you, Chair Dunbar. No, I don't have any closing comments. Thank you very much for hearing our bill today.
Very good. We will, of course, have this bill back before us at some point in the near future. We're going to set it aside for further consideration. Thank you to Ms. Giorgio. Thank you to Dr. Lawrence and Ms. Allen for being here today. The next meeting of the Senate Health and Social Services Committee will be Tuesday, February 10th. We will have Guidehouse here to discuss their Medicaid rate review, as well as an introductory hearing on Senator Tobin's bill, SB 206, an act relating to school suicide policies and establishing the Firearm Safe Storage Grant Fund. With that, it is 4:03 p.m., and this meeting is adjourned.